certainly overwhelms the law enforcement on the ground, but when you compact that with the fact that often our tribal nations are without jurisdiction based on the identity of the perpetrator, it really creates a crisis.
Mary Catherine Nagle and Matt Lone Bear, again, our condolences on the finding the body of Olivia Lone Bear. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59 and 51 seconds right there. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News. But before we go to the KBOO Evening News, we'd just like to always give a big thank you out to our KBOO members. You're not a KBOO member? Support your local community radio station. Just go online to kboo.fm and you can always click on that donate button any time of the year, because you know what? This is a radio station run by you and for you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Facing America's Nuclear Legacy, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the Pacific Islands, on Monday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza in Portland. Facing America's Nuclear Legacy will remember the victims of the August 6th and August 9th, 1945 atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Speakers will discuss the lasting impacts of decades of nuclear weapons testing, the nuclear weapons situation between the United States and North Korea, the toxic cycle of nuclear weapons production, and more. Again, that's Facing America's Nuclear Legacy, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the Pacific Islands, on Monday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stop the Hate, Saturday, August 4th, 10:30 a.m. at City Hall in Portland. Patriot Prayer are hosting a gathering of the alt-right. These gatherings have led to intimidation and violence against members of vulnerable communities. Stop the Hate is a counter-demonstration working to create a space that is as safe as possible for everyone to show that white nationalism and white supremacy are not welcome in Portland. Again, that's Stop the Hate, Saturday, August 4th, from 10:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from the Oregon Symphony, located at 909 Southwest Washington Street in downtown Portland, presenting Gary Trudeau, political cartoonist and creator of Doonesbury Comics, sharing from his latest book, Sad, Doonesbury in the Time of Trump, Tuesday, October 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information available by phone at 503-228-1353 or online at orsymphony.org. And guess what time it is? It's time for your Friday evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an action over I-5 pushes to save the 75 remaining resident orcas.
The U.S. District Court rules in favor of the NAACP and DACA.
And Portland scooters still leaving people scratching their heads.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 3rd, 2018. I'm Zealous Marchant.
And I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Today, the Sea Shepherd Portland chapter is holding an action over I-5 to bring awareness to the plight of endangered southern ridge orcas, of which there are only 75 left. The group began holding signs and hanging banners over the failing street pedestrian bridge spanning I-5 at 3:30 p.m. this afternoon and will continue to rally until 6:30 p.m. KBOO's Zealous Marchant spoke to Michelle Seidelman, the Sea Shepherd Portland chapter coordinator, to find out more.
Okay, so how did you want me to introduce you?
Hold on one second, because I'm going to pull up the phone numbers.
Okay.
Because I want people to call.
Okay.
Sorry.
Chapter coordinator. Thank you, Michelle, for taking time to talk to our audience on the fly. I understand that there's an action going on pretty soon here over I-5.
Yes, thank you so much for speaking with me. We are about to have a 3-hour demonstration on the failing street overpass on Highway 5, trying to call attention to the southern resident orca population off the coast of Washington that are literally starving to death. And this week brought world attention to their cause when Taliqua J35 lost the first calf that was born into J-pod in 3 years and lost her after about an hour. She's been carrying her on her back and with her for approximately 10 days. And can't seem to let her go. And at times, she's actually had her son, Notch, has been gently carrying his deceased sister, as well as at times other families of J-Pod. They've been fish sharing and trying desperately to be certain that she doesn't starve to death. But we're quite concerned about her right now as well.
Oh, wow. That's a lot going on.
Yeah. So we're basically out there. We're going to be holding a large banner over the freeway asking the people in both Washington and Oregon State to call out to both governors and senators and ask them to please get involved and push for the breach of the Snake River Dam. Dams, the lower four, need to be breached. As of this year, the breaching needs to begin in order for us to have any hope of saving this critically endangered population of orca whales.
Who can people call to help spur action?
Yeah, the best number, if you only have time to make one phone call, the best person to call would be Governor Inslee. He is the governor of Washington. His phone number is 360-902-4111. But also involved in this and increasingly, really, we need them to get involved is our local legislators as well. Senator Merkley is 202-224-3753. Ron Wyden, 202-224-5244. And Governor Kate Brown, 503-378-4532. And the other senators in Washington, Patty Murray, 202-224-2621. And Senator Maria Cantwell, 202-224-3441. But once again, Inslee is the most important at 360-902-4111. And, you know, really, this science, we have already researched and come up with four options to bring back salmon to the Pacific Northwest, which is the only food that these southern residents feed on. And basically, the number one way that we know to bring back the salmon runs in the Pacific Northwest is to breach the lower floor of the Snake River Dam. We've spent billions of dollars trying the other options, and now they're stalling to do another environmental impact study when we already did an environmental impact study that cost taxpayers millions, and the science said breach the dams. It's a stall tactic, and we won't have time. The southern residents.
That was Delisolis Marchand reporting for the KABU News.
The NAACP is celebrating a victory for DACA participants and DACA-eligible persons coast-to-coast today. This afternoon, the U.S. District Court affirmed its prior ruling that the Department of Homeland Security violated administrative procedure by rescinding the DACA program without sufficient explanation, rejecting arguments by the federal government and newly articulated reasoning from the DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. The court ruled once again that the government failed to explain adequately its assertion that DACA is unlawful. NAACP President CEO Derek Johnson said in statements to the press that, quote, this represents a powerful victory against the attempts to dehumanize immigrants who are law-abiding and productive residents of the United States and who were long brought to this country as children through no fault of their own, end quote.
The Silicon Valley e-scooter craze has reached Portland as of last week and have become quickly controversial. The Portland Bureau of Transportation first began issuing permits to e-scooter companies Skip and Bird on July 25th, with Lime receiving their permit a few days later. Skip, Bird, and Lime e-scooters hit the streets on July 27th as a part of a four-month pilot program in conjunction with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. The number of scooters permitted during this pilot program is capped at 2,500, and the scooters will be permitted to run until November 20th. Between now and November 20th, city transportation officials will closely monitor scooter riders and their relationship with the public, at which point they will, quote, determine whether scooters are compatible with the safe, efficient, and equitable operation of Portland transportation system. For those unaware, an e-scooter is a two-wheeled standing platformed razor scooter-style vehicle that is powered by an electric motor, which can reach up to speeds of 15 miles per hour and can achieve a range of 30 miles on a single charge. The Willamette Week published an article which broke down the numerical figures of how the scooter programs are to work in Portland. In this piece, they disclosed that Bird and Lime were each permitted to deploy 683 scooters, while Skip had been allowed to deploy 450 scooters. The minimum number of scooters which have to be deployed to the east side of Portland each day is 100, and there is a 25-cent fee paid per ride by scooter companies to the city due to the fact that the city has agreed to oversee the program. In a more logistical nature, the scooters must be parked 5 feet away from crosswalks, bike racks, fire hydrants, drinking fountains, public art, driveways, alleys, accessibility ramps, marked disabled parking spaces, and taxi loading zones. If a scooter is left in any one of these designated no parking zones for longer than an hour, the city can penalize the scooter company.
As a rapidly growing entity within the active transportation market, e-scooters have been tested in a number of dense, globalized cities, specifically Los Angeles and San Francisco. And both San Francisco and Los Angeles city lawmakers and local residents alike have expressed disdain with the pilot programs, with Los Angeles City Councilman Paul Koretz going as far as calling for a temporary ban on electric scooters on July 31st. In June, San Francisco City Council imposed a ban on the scooters until the company finalized their permitting process. San Francisco resident Michelle Wiley went as far as to write to the Willamette Week to express her utter grief in dealing with what she called, quote, a scooter invasion, end quote. A number of Portland business owners and volunteer organization members have expressed concern for the safety of their customers and the residents of Portland, claiming that the majority of riders they see are riding without helmets and are riding on the sidewalk, not in the street. Despite this, a number of Willamette Week readers, in response to a tweet asking about sightings of bad behavior on the scooters, wrote to the publication stating they were pro-scooter and the real menace of Portland streets were the car drivers.
And now it's time for today's news report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Anchorage restaurant owner has found herself in the middle of a national debate involving trademark infringement and cultural appropriation. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell explains.
Tasha Gehele is really proud of her new restaurant.
I may be a little biased, but I think we make some of the best poke in Anchorage.
Kahele opened Aloha Poke Stop in April. In Hawaiian, the word poke means to dice, cube, or cut. It's a staple of Kahele's native Hawaiian culture. Another staple of that culture, the word aloha.
When you walk into a business that has aloha and you have native Hawaiian family working in it, you can expect that kind of spirit, that kind of food.
But just weeks after opening, Kahele got a letter from the Chicago-based Aloha Poke Company, which is owned and operated by non-Hawaiians. Your use of aloha and aloha poke must cease immediately, the letter read. A letter similar to Kahele's was made public after it was sent to another native Hawaiian business owner. That spread online, creating a massive angry uproar. The Aloha Poke Company has since apologized on its Facebook page. To those who care about Hawaiian culture, it said, quote, "We want to say to them directly how deeply sorry we are that the issue has been so triggering."
You know, it's hard to accept an apology that doesn't sound so genuine, and it leaves out a lot.
On top of that, the company is still insisting it owns aloha and aloha poke when used in connection with restaurants, catering, and takeout service.
Hawaii has been commercialized and colonized, and our culture has been appropriated in so many ways.
Customers, Kahele says, will come into her shop and ask about her traditional style of poke.
They're like, "Oh, the Hawaiian style poke, does that have pineapples in it?" And I'm like, "No, it has a very traditional nut base, kukui nut base, that makes it Hawaiian."
Kahele's restaurant shows off her traditional food and native culture. It's also a family business, which is why Kahele chose to rename her shop Lei's Poke Stop after her daughter. Lei is standing behind the register.
If at another time we have to fight anyone for the word Lei, that's
good luck.
Good luck. My daughter said good luck.
For National Native News, I'm Emily Russell.
A bill to enhance penalties under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act has been introduced by Representative Todd Rokita. The Indiana congressman says the bill would hold academics accountable to tribes when they violate federal law. Earlier this year, the federal government fined Hamilton County Parks for NAGPRA violations. Archaeologists reportedly excavated thousands of items, including artifacts and human remains, from a site without notifying tribes. The bill would increase penalties and move the enforcement from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Portland State University announced this week it will offer a bachelor's degree in Indigenous Nations and Native American Studies starting this fall. According to the announcement, it's the first such major in Oregon after a years-long effort by students, faculty, and staff. A minor has been offered since 2002. The major was approved in June and will offer courses focused on tribal governance, sovereignty, and other Native issues. Students will also have the opportunity for community-based learning with tribes, Native organizations, and government agencies. The first graduates could receive degrees as early as spring or summer of next year. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports a plan to transfer bison from Yellowstone National Park to the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana by the end of the year may face a delay. A park official says the transfer is uncertain due to concerns if the bison will be disease-free. 89 bison are being quarantined. The tribes were reportedly left out of discussions. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Oregon's kids and our justice system. An effort to get feedback from the community. At 6, it's Bread and Roses. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, spots of clouds with lows dipping into around 61 degrees. The weekend is expecting to rise back up into the mid-80s, so be prepared for that. Today in history, Adolf Hitler merged the offices of German Chancellor and President, declaring himself Führer, or leader. The quote of the day is from rap artist, R&B artist Cardi B. She said, quote, "I'm an emotional gangster. I cry almost every month," end quote.
employee at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts, called police on Umu Kanute, who was eating her lunch in a common area. The employee told the Huffington Post that she, quote, seemed to be out of place, unquote. Kanute, a student, is currently working at Smith as a teaching assistant and residential advisor through the summer. Kanute said she was taking a break from work last Tuesday when a police officer approached her to ask why she was there. In a Facebook post, Kanute wrote, quote, "So I'm sitting down minding my business and someone calls the cops on me while I'm just chilling. This is why being black in America is scary," unquote. Kanute said to media outlets afterwards that, quote, "No student of color should have to explain why they belong in prestigious white institutions. I worked my hardest to get into Smith and I deserve to feel safe on my campus," unquote. Smith College has begun a detailed external investigation. Smith College President Kathleen McCartney, along with other Smith College officials, including Amy Hunter, Smith's Interim Director of Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity, have issued statements on the campus website regarding the incident, saying Smith College is, quote, "committed to timely and transparent communication throughout this investigation and will send further updates to the community as soon as they are available." Transcripts of the original 911 call have also been posted, but with the caller's identity redacted.
On Thursday, August 2nd, the Trump administration unveiled its new automotive emission policies, significantly weakening the previously implemented Obama-era corporate average fuel economy regulations. In a major change to previous precedent, the new rules challenges California's right to set pollution standards for the rest of the United States, and as a result of this change of precedent, could end up splitting the automobile industry into two markets, one that abides by California's regulations and another that takes advantage of the less stringent regulations. In specific, the new regulations would hold the average fuel economy standards at 37 miles per gallon after 2021. Additionally, it would upend the 1970 Clean Air Act, which would revoke the legal waiver allowing California to set more stringent emissions regulation than those of the federal standard. While the freshly created set of rules faced predictable criticism from environmentalists and consumer groups, automotive industry officials also detested the policies, citing the necessity of progression in sustainable automotive emissions technology. Under the Obama administration, the EPA and Transportation Department policy was that automakers would be required to create passenger vehicle engines that could achieve an average of 54 miles per gallon by 2025. As one of the main measures of Obama's environmental policies, it was heavily detested by automakers for being cumbersome and difficult to adhere by. However, the new Trump administration regulations, according to automakers, has rolled too far back and could complicate the automotive market even further.
Governor of California Jerry Brown stated, quote, "For Trump to now destroy a law first enacted at the request of Ronald Reagan 5 decades ago is a betrayal and an assault on the health of Americans everywhere," unquote. Despite sharp rebuking from environmentalists, automakers, and some state politicians, Transportation Secretary Elaine L. Chao and the acting administrator of the EPA, Andrew Wheeler, dismissed the Obama-era policy, stating that they would have, quote, "imposed significant costs on American consumers and eliminate jobs," unquote, whereas their new regulations would, quote, "give consumers greater access to safer, more affordable vehicles while continuing to protect the environment," unquote. At the core of the reasoning behind the demolitioning of Obama-era administration regulations was the fact that these policies called for the creation of lighter vehicles to augment the ease of achieving 54 miles per gallon, a policy that current EPA administrators say would jeopardize the safety of consumers. The Transportation Department's acting administrator, Heidi King, stated that these new policies could save thousands of lives, and Willem Wierum, the EPA's assistant administrator for air and radiation, concurred in asserting, quote, "there's a tension between calling for ever-increasing efficiency standards on one hand and the obligation to have safe vehicles on the road."
How do scammers target the elderly, and what can you do to avoid getting ripped off? Today, KABU News speaks with Ellen Clem, Director of Consumer Outreach in the Office of the State Attorney General of the State of Oregon. Ellen is a lawyer who formerly worked for the American Bar Association, and her job is to educate seniors on how to be savvy consumers and avoid scams. This and more on this edition of Retired Rewired.
Here's our series on aging in Portland. Retired or rewired? What it's like getting old in a youth-centered city. Are you up for that challenge? We'll bring you lots of views, but you'll have to answer this question for yourself. Is Portland a good place in which to grow old? Ellen Clem is our guest today. Ellen is the Director of Consumer Outreach and Education in the Office of the Attorney General of the State of Oregon. Ellen, welcome to KABU.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Ellen, you've got a big job, and we are focusing on one aspect of it, that is scamming the elderly. Is that a big industry in Oregon? Is there a lot of fraud directed against the elderly?
Well, let me just clarify. My job is not scamming the elderly. My job is keeping the elderly safe from scams.
Oh, sorry.
I don't want to confuse your listeners.
No.
But yes, it is a big job to keep older adults in the state of Oregon safe from fraud and scams. And I love doing it. It's a challenge, but it's a different challenge every day, and it definitely keeps me entertained and working hard.
Can you give us an idea of how big this scamming business is in terms of arrests or convictions, dollar values, anything?
I wish I could, but it's really difficult to quantify with numbers, and there's a number of reasons for that. The biggest reason, unfortunately, is that individuals who fall victim to a fraud or a scam in the state, and all states, in fact, across the country, are hesitant to report that they've lost money or been a victim of identity theft for a number of reasons, but the important reason is that they're embarrassed.
Okay, what are the most common types of scams that you find used against the elderly? Can you tell us that?
Well, I would definitely like to talk about how the phone is used as a tool to commit fraud against older Oregonians.
Let's talk about the phone.
The phone is sort of the bane of my existence, because when I was growing up, I'm almost 40, and I was taught that you answered every single phone call and you were polite to the caller on the other end. And I assume that many of your listeners were taught the same thing. And it's very difficult to navigate the new world of fraud and scams that comes over the telephone line, because we really probably shouldn't be answering every phone call that comes our way, and we definitely shouldn't be polite to these callers that are trying to take our money, our identity, and other personal information.
Are you saying that we should let our calls go into the answering mode?
I think that's a great idea. You know, my mom does that. She lets every phone call go to her answering machine.
People with landlines at home are targeted easily. Is that right?
That is true. So gone are the days that, when I was growing up, the phone book came to my front step and my neighbor's front steps, and that was about as far as it went. Nowadays, everything is online, including the phone book.
So the advice from Ellen and the Attorney General is don't answer the phone right away and get rid of that listing on the phone book.
I think that's good advice. I would also encourage your listeners, if they do answer the phone, they should hang up if they see a number of signs, warning signs.
Well, that raises the question of a publication you have on your website, which anyone can read, 6 signs it's a scam. What are they?
Yes, that is a very popular handout that we produced several years ago. The first sign of a scam is that the scammer or the fraudster contacts you out of the blue. We were talking earlier about the weather turning warm and people outside gardening and having an individual drive by and stop and say something akin to, gosh, it looks like you could really use a new roof. That's a little bit out of the blue. Same with phone calls, the IRS imposter scam, the grandparent scam. These are all phone calls out of the blue. You didn't know that you owed money to the IRS. You had no idea that your grandson was going to be traveling to Mexico or Canada. So that contact out of the blue is the first sign that it's a scam.
You're talking about a scam that's ongoing about the installation of burglar alarms. What do we have to worry about there?
Sure. So as the weather gets warmer, we're going to see a lot more of these door-to-door sales. And not all of them are scammers, but we see an uptick this time of year. And before I left to come to your show today, I checked in with my team, and they wanted me to mention the fact that they're seeing a rise in the number of complaints associated with alarm companies and scam alarm companies. A variety of complaints have come into our office in the past couple weeks, but the gist is basically somebody comes to the door, says they have a great deal that you can't refuse on an alarm system. They install the alarm, they do pretty, you know, not great work, and then they bill you for something that's significantly higher than what you agreed upon, or perhaps the alarm system doesn't work at all, or even in one awful, very rare, hopefully rare situation, we had an individual who had installed an alarm system on an older woman's house and then came back several days later to rob her.
Or they could be installing an alarm system that actually listens into your conversations.
Oh, gosh, we haven't had any complaints about that, but the scammers are, they're always trying new things, so I wouldn't be surprised to hear it.
Sounds like a Lexus to me. You made me aware of the issue of carrying your Medicare card.
Yes.
I had not thought about this. I have it in my pocket right now. What's the issue there?
The issue there is, if you carry your Medicare card in your wallet or your purse, you are at risk of identity theft. If that wallet or purse is stolen and your card is in there, the card contains extremely sensitive information, your social security number.
We talked a little bit about charities.
Well, during the end of the year, we see a lot of scams related to charitable giving. Typically, that involves scam charities or charities that have popped up overnight. We encourage Oregonians to do their research before they give to any charity. And you can do that on our website.